Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY this gorgeous, beautiful day. It is Wednesday, January 30th, and we're live in the studios of KRFY. This is the morning show with myself, Susie Prez.
And I'm over here, your co-host, Chris Bessler.
You're good morning, back, Susie. Chris.
Yeah, I've been out for a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back.
But you soldiered on.
I did. And it was fine, but, you know, I always miss having you here because I'm used to you. How many years have we been doing this?
Oh, we've been at it over 4 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much of a dedication, if you ask me.
Yeah.
But we like doing the morning show. We have folks in from all over. And who are our guests today, Chris?
Today we're talking with Lisa Halls and Sean Woodward from the Lake Pendere School District. And we're going to be talking about the upcoming supplemental levy that's coming March 12th. And we're sticking to the facts today. We're going to be talking about who, what, when, where, and why of the levy. Sean, thanks for coming in. Superintendent Sean.
Thank you for having us.
And Chief Financial Officer Lisa, thank you for coming in.
Good morning. Thank you.
And we're going to swing back to the topic of the day here in just a minute.
Because we want to right now talk about what?
Yeah. Well, at this point in the show, you always talk about the weather, Susie.
The weather from the National Weather Service. Currently in Sandpoint, Idaho, we have 18 degrees. Today, we can expect a high of 36 with patchy freezing fog in the morning and then partly sunny. We've been enjoying a lot of sunshine lately. Tonight, a low of 23 with patchy freezing fog. And Thursday, a high of 38. Again, the same thing. Fog in the morning and sunny in the afternoon. And then on Friday, it looks like we have about 90% chance of rain or snow with a high of 40 degrees, so it probably will be rain.
In town.
In
but
town.
Up on the mountain, we'll hope for snow up there.
But before we get to that, I just want to let people know what's going around in the country. We know that it's frigid weather. They call it a polar vortex. And just for perspective, in International Falls, Minnesota, they are currently at minus 35 degrees with a minus 55 wind chill. That's pretty cold. And the interesting thing, and I have a friend in Pepin, Wisconsin, her low last night was 27, currently minus 27, currently still minus 27 with a minus 50 degree wind chill. She has to go out to the barn and check her studio. She has a pottery studio there. And every time she goes, she calls me first and then calls me when she gets back, make sure she makes it back because she's way out in the country by herself. But on Saturday, in that whole part of the country, their high will be 39 degrees plus.
That's above zero.
Above
so they're going to have
zero.
A huge switch of, 70, 80 degrees in just a matter of days.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So there's some perspective for you.
Crazy weather.
Yep.
Hey, other things going on around this town. We got, of course, as usual, there's a lot of things happening. Entertainment-wise, the Ultimate African Circus, they call it, called Cirque Zuma Zuma, has come to the Panada on Saturday. That's this Saturday. And it's, I'm sure, a really spectacular show with dancers, live music, Egyptian limbo dances, Gabonese tumbling, all kinds of cool stuff that's going to be happening. So that's a bit of exotic culture and some pretty cool performing arts coming here. That's on Saturday. And then if you want to really switch things up, the Inland Empire Sled Dog Races are also happening Saturday and Sunday up at Priest Lake. And that's a very cool
thing. It's really fun to go to. I especially take children to it because there's dogs everywhere. So you know how much fun that is.
Yeah. Well, and those are working dogs, all mm-hmm. the sled dogs. Things going on outside. Sunrise this morning was at 7:18 a.m. It's going to set tonight at 4:40 p.m. I'm proud and happy to report that over the course of the last week, we've gained 19 minutes of daylight per day as we're heading now towards the spring spring equinox.
And you can really kind of feel that now. Mm-hmm. At night when you go home, it's 5 o'clock, it's not pitch dark. It's just kind of twilight.
Yeah. And speaking of twilight, and the night sky has been gorgeous when we get clear weather. Two nights ago, Venus was huge in the early morning. If you caught it around 5, 6 before sunrise, very bright. The constellations are really bright. If you have a chance to get out in the morning before sunrise, you can see some really cool things up in the night sky right now. And I wanted to mention one more thing. The annual Sandpoint Reader, Sandpoint Online media survey is going on right now. And it's a chance to weigh in and let the world, or at least the survey, know what kind of local media you use to get informed.
What is your favorite radio station? Is it KRFY?
Well, it has to be, Susie.
Well, it is.
But we actually have some good commercial radio here too.
Absolutely.
So, this has been going on for 5 years now by the Reader and Sandpoint Online. So look for that. You can go to the Reader website or the Sandpoint Online website and take that survey. And also there's a chance to win a dining certificate if you get lucky in that.
Right. I wanted to also mention that the movie Green Book was at the Panada last weekend, and I think they've held it over. I don't know I think it's tonight and maybe Friday night. I know you can go to panada.org and find out, but great movie. That's all I can say about that.
Yeah, and of course, that stars Viggo Mortensen, who is a sometimes resident here. And be great if he came back to town and maybe, you know, gave a talk and showed the movie again.
Yeah, that would be really nice.
Could happen. He's done that before. Yeah.
He's working on a movie, directing and acting in a movie in Toronto. And it's in production right now, yeah. So pretty busy.
I did go see the Green Book, and it was really an excellent show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to confirm, it is showing at the Panada again, I think tonight, actually.
Mm-hmm. One other thing, Saturday, it's February 2nd. Do you know what that day that is, Chris?
Is it Groundhog Day?
That is it Groundhog is. Day.
Yeah.
There you go.
So... No, go out and look for your shadow.
That's right. I'm not sure what that all means, but I know it's a good movie.
Yeah. Okay, with that, time to get on to today's topic. Again, Sean Woodward, Superintendent of Schools, and Lisa Hawes, CFO for the schools. Thank you for coming in. We want to talk about specifically about the upcoming supplemental levy that's going to be voted on March 12th. And I guess to start, why a levy, Sean? Why are we doing this every 2 years?
Yeah, you bet. So the term supplemental is quite a misnomer for how much we rely on this levy to operate our school district. It funds roughly 30% of our overall operating revenue.
Yeah, so it's more than supplemental. It's kind of now built into the way our schools are financed here. Well, can you give us the broad outlines of what this levy constitutes this time?
Yeah, you bet. So it funds approximately one-third of all of our district staff, which represents roughly 300 full and part-time employees. It funds all of our academic and athletic extracurricular activities. So anything that you see before or after school is funded through the levy. It funds our curriculum, instructional materials, professional development, as well as teacher mentoring programs. It funds all of our technology, our network upgrades, our fiber network connectivity, hardware, software licenses, and all of our technology department staff. This time around, it is funding, and we'll talk more about this later, I'm sure. It's allowing us to have far more competitive wages and salaries for our staff. We did quite an extensive salary study for our certificated employees and our classified employees as well. And that pretty much covers the gist of what the levy funds.
Now, the levy amount this time is $12.7 million per year. And that it represents an increase from the levy that was run 2 years ago. So, Lisa, why don't you jump in on that? What's the rationale with the levy increase?
Well, first, I would say that this is our 19th consecutive year of having a maintenance and operations supplemental levy, and I would resonate what our superintendent has just shared with your audience, that it's 30% of our revenue, and we are asking for an increase to the voters, and the largest portion of that increase is to become regionally in Idaho across all categories of staff, more competitive in our compensation package.
Okay. Yeah, I do want to dig in on that a little bit more going forward. But you mentioned we've done 19 years now. We've every 2 years we've been going to the voters, or the district's been going to the voters asking for a levy to, it started out probably as supplemental, but now it's become a big part of the overall budget. Now, is this common among school districts in Idaho?
Yes, it is. Presently, the state appropriation for this year is $1.9 billion, which does not include any voter-approved property tax component. And statewide, through the maintenance and operations supplemental levies, $202 million is being levied this year, which is equal to 10.5% of the state appropriation. And of the 115 school districts that can levy property taxes through the supplemental levy, 83% of them currently have a supplemental levy in place. And if we look at the overall property taxes being levied through school districts this year, it's $570 million, which is equal to 30% of the state's annual appropriation. So for your audience, it's important to understand that all but two school districts in the state of Idaho currently, Prairie Elementary School, which has two students, and Arbondale Elementary District, which has 18 students. So 20 of the 300,000 students in Idaho right now are not being supported by some kind of voter-approved property tax measure. So it's just the way the Constitution,
reliant upon these. Right. These
so we are in the majority.
Levies, you know, yes.
Just to divert a little bit, but on that same subject, what is the plan? I mean, how long into the future are levies going to be part of these school districts all over the state? And is there a plan in the state legislature to kind of alleviate that, or at least take some of the burden off the school districts to fully fund schools?
So in the state of Idaho, prior to the year 2007, there was something called equalization, which meant that part of the state's annual appropriation to public schools was a non-voter approved $300 per 100,000 of net taxable value of property tax. And that's how the majority of states in our nation operate, that there is a component of non-voter approved property tax levied to support public education. And now, 3 years ago, our state put together an interim K-12 funding formula committee, of which our local representative, Representative Dixon, was one of this 10-member committee. And originally they thought the work would take a year, and then they realized the magnitude of trying to examine a funding formula that had not been really fundamentally changed in 25 years. And now, 3 years later, sometime this week, draft legislation is going to be released and introduced into the House and Senate Germane Education Committees. And during that process, they hired two different consultants, a woman named Margarita Rosa, and more recently, a company out of Colorado. The lead person is Mike Griffith. And both of those consultants recommended to the interim committee that Idaho include a non-voter approved component of property tax in the funding formula. But the committee has not made that recommendation. And so I guess the technical answer to that is that the Constitution is written as it is, and there's nothing proposed that would change that element.
So short story, I guess, is that it's unlikely that the funding formula that Idaho currently has, with some money coming from the state, but heavy reliance on these locally passed levies, is going to continue into the foreseeable future.
Definitely.
Yeah. So that's where we are. I guess it comes down to local voters deciding how much they want to support the education of their kids in their own communities, in a way, you could argue, yeah, well, let's let the local communities decide, yeah, how much they want to support their children. I guess the question then becomes, well, what do we get for our money?
Exactly.
So I'd be curious to know, how is the school district doing in terms of student achievement, Sean?
Yeah, you bet. So from a regional and state standpoint, we are every year in and year out one of the highest performing school districts. When you take a look at SAT results, we also have some national norm reference data that we are in the upper quartile from a national percentile ranking. And then, of course, our state achievement results as well. We have a couple of our schools, as a matter of fact, that are performing in the 99th percentile in the state of Idaho. So we're doing very well, but that's only part of the story. The second part is we've been very responsive to the needs of our community. And I'm very proud that we have an excellent school board and super staff that allow us to be very, very creative. I'll give you a couple of examples. Number one, 6 years ago, there were virtually no full-day kindergarten programs in the state of Idaho. We got the ball rolling on that because we believe strongly in early intervention for kids, and we continue to do that work. We have school-based mental health clinics now. These are not levy-funded, but this serves as a good example of us being very responsive to the needs of the community. Those are simply, as you remember, we had a time where we were experiencing some youth suicide in our community. It was just awful, but we rallied together with community members and decided to figure out how we could increase the protective factors for our youth. And one of them was, well, we're having issues related to access to mental health services. So we literally hold school-based mental health clinics at our schools. We were the first school district in the state of Idaho to do that. And they're filled up. Kids are being served. We just serve as a conduit between the health clinics and the families. And they just happen to serve the students at the school. So again, from an academic standpoint and a responsiveness standpoint, we've shown that we're in one of the top school districts in the state of Idaho.
You mentioned the initiation of the full-day K option and the needs of our community. How do you determine what those are? Just by listening, paying attention, or do you have what the school board is paying attention? How do you know? How do you determine those?
You bet. A couple of different ways. One was we're really concerned about traditionally underrepresented voices in our community. So for an example, a couple of years ago, we just did not really have a relationship with homeschool families. And one of my personal philosophies and professional is, if you sign up for public education, you have a moral and ethical obligation to attempt to serve all kids in the community, not just the ones you're currently serving. So again, we reach out even to those families that do not have children in our school district and engage with them. The other thing that we do is we engage with our own families on a regular basis through coffee talks at every one of our schools. We randomly invite parents in, and typically we'll ask them three questions. Number one, what's going well in our school? Number two, is there something that needs some short-term attention that we need to get on? And number three, what are your hopes, dreams, and aspirations for our school community? So again, it's all about engaging in creative ways with the community. Last year, we went through a year-long process that I believe is pretty robust with our community to get input regarding our strategic priorities for the future of the school district. And we landed on five of them. And we had about 1,500 people interact with us on a variety of levels. One of the areas that came up for us as far as five-year priorities is recruit and retain high-quality and talented staff members. And that is the biggest part of our increase in our supplemental levy.
If you're just tuning in, this is the KRFY Morning Show with Chris and Susie. And today we're speaking with Sean Woodward and Lisa Hollis from the Lake Pendre School District about the upcoming school levy on March 12th. Well, let's dig in on that particular point, Sean, with teacher salaries. Of course, we're being in my day job around here, I'm an employer myself, and I know that the employment market is, we're almost at full employment in Idaho and other parts of the country. And when that happens, if you're a worker, of course, you're going to be looking for jobs that, that pay well. And I, that same phenomenon, I'm sure, is happening with district staff. So as you mentioned, a big chunk of this, the increase in the levy this year is to try to make the school district more competitive with its salaries. How do we compare right now to districts in Idaho or districts nearby?
You bet. So our salary comparison included the Lakeland School District, Post Falls School District, Coeur d'Alene School District, but we also included the Meade School District, as well as the Newport School District, in both in Washington State. We are not trying to compete with Washington State wages and salaries. We're just using it as a point of reference.
And to be clear, Washington pays teachers at a lot higher scale.
Exactly. Yeah. We are shooting for around $70,000. That would help allow us to be regionally Idaho competitive for our top attainable staff, our high end. Currently, as an example, the Meade School District is paying almost $98,000 per year. The Newport School District, $82,000 per year. We're trying to get to 70. Currently, Lakeland, Post Falls, and Coeur d'Alene School District is right around 68,000. And Lisa, correct me if I'm wrong, we're right around 66 to 67,000. So we're adjusting our top end salaries for our certificated staff. Our starting salaries, we're wanting to be at $40,000 for our starting salary, and then we're adjusting all of our steps in between as well. You may have heard, and maybe this is an after the break explanation, we get a lot of questions around, well, isn't the state projecting $40,000 starting teacher wages? So why do you need to ask us for an increased amount? And Lisa can put a really fine point on the reason for that.
So that's correct. Our new governor, Governor Little, in his K-12 budget request to the Joint Finance Appropriation Committee, suggested on what's called the Teacher Career Ladder Allocation Module that the first three rungs be increased, rung one to 40,000, rung two to 41, and rung three to 42. But he did not, on the remaining rungs, cascade that so that the remaining rungs remain stagnant for year five of the career ladder. So we presently have about a $35 million overall budget, and we have 234 teachers this year, of which 10 of them fall in these first three rungs. So of a $35 million budget, there would be an increase of about $30,000 to us, which is less than 0.01% an increase on the state appropriation.
So what the state is going to do to contribute to that is really a small part of what you would really need to affect the change in salaries.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, and teachers are, we have what we call classified staff. Those are staff that do not hold a teaching credential, administrative staff that have a teaching credential and an administrative credential, and then teachers in this teacher career ladder allocation module. For our, in salaries alone, teachers make up 65% of our salaries on an annualized basis, framing that across the nation, any public school budget, the people, including the teacher component, are, you know, about 84% of any given budget.
So you speak of the career ladder, that a teacher comes into the district, they're just out of college, they're going to start at the low end of the salaries. How long does it take for somebody, an employee, to get to the high end that you referenced?
You bet. Are we at, how many steps do we have in our current
14,
ladder?
Yeah.
We have 14. So basically 14 years along with increased education.
Right. The number you just used, Lisa, sounds like most of our teachers are sticking with us because there's only a few that are falling in that first rung. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Right, Lake Ponderay School District, as far as where teachers fall on this, the respective rungs, we are heavily weighted towards senior teachers that have been within public education in Idaho for at least the 13 years. Almost half of our staff is in the top attainable rung.
But as relates to this idea that we need to pay our teachers more to be competitive, how's that affecting retention of teachers in the district?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we are far below the state and national average when it comes to retaining our staff more than 3 years. So this last year, we were at about 60% of our staff were still with us after 3 years, our certificated staff. The national average is somewhere around 90%. And the state average, I don't have that with me, is around 80%. So we're losing staff during the front end of their career, which, of course, there's a high cost to that. From an anecdotal standpoint, we know that much of the reasons given are because they can make more elsewhere and move somewhere where the cost of it is lower. The other thing that we're seeing is more and more every year we are hiring teachers without teaching certificates, and which we're allowed to do in the state in our state due to the rural nature and the teacher shortage here. And we don't like to do that, obviously, but the state allows us to, as long as a teacher is enrolled in a teacher certification program and shows adequate progress, then we can employ them. 7 years ago, when I first arrived here as superintendent, it wasn't uncommon to have 20, 25 people apply, qualified people, for an elementary teaching job. That is not the case anymore. I have had questions in the community that say, well, is this related to employee morale? You must be doing something if these people are leaving on the front end of their careers. And the answer is no. We have one of the most robust quality teacher mentoring programs in the state of Idaho that others come and want to learn about. And I also have real qualitative data from staff related to culture, morale, climate. We do every single year in every school, and it's one of the highest rates out of the four school districts that I've worked in. So we're just having a hard time holding on to people because of the salaries and wages.
Well, and the numbers you threw out are almost startling. If somebody just moves across the border to teach in Newport, they could make $12,000 more. If we get to the point you'd like to get to with top-end salaries on this levy. And, of course, if they moved across the border to, was it Liberty Lake, you said?
Mead.
They're over $20,000 more in their salary, and that's an awful lot of money for a, you know, working-class salary.
Yeah, and it's literally over $30,000 in that particular district. Again, we're not trying to compete with that. We're trying to compete with our Idaho regional school districts, and it will make a difference.
Yeah.
Just now, the other piece people are asking about is, well, it seems like an awful big jump now. Well, we have to make a leap at some point. Otherwise, we're never going to be regionally competitive.
Yeah.
So this is the year.
Well, let's dig in on that a little bit, because I know that the levy that was passed last year, I think it was at the same, not 2 years ago, in 2017, it was same or just slightly higher than the levy that had been passed the previous. Am I accurate in that? Those levy numbers?
So 2 years ago, there was an increase. 4 years ago, it was a flat amount.
Okay. So really, we're going back about 6 years. It was a small increase 2 years ago. So we're really about where we were maybe 6 years ago, not much different in the levy request. One thing that did come up that the district could have done in fall when we had an increase in enrollment, the district could have sought an automatic increase that didn't even require voter approval, but the district chose not to do that.
Exactly.
Can you speak to that?
You bet. So this has been the last 2 years. We could have received almost $1 million of non-voter approved taxes from our community, and we decided not to go to our board to ask for that. Now we are asking for that because our student count is up and we need the staffing.
I just wanted to go back really quickly for a moment. What is the starting salary of a teacher with a master's degree certified? Is that
35.8?
Okay,
$35,800.
So we're not at that 40.
That's correct.
Hoped for.
The state minimum right now for all school districts in Idaho is $35,800.
So we're at the minimum. Okay, thanks for that clarification. And Do we want to take a quick break, folks?
Yeah, let's take a musical break. We have a lot of stuff left to explore. We'd like to come back after the break and talk to some of the questions that people have raised out in the community. You've already addressed a couple of those, Sean, but there are some others that we have seen in letters to the editor and at some of your public meetings. So let's do that when we get back.
Yeah. Here's a quick song by Brandi Carlile, Have You Ever? And the only reason I'm playing this, it's one of my favorite songs right now. So we'll be right back. Stay with us for the morning show.
Facility levy, are we running ready?
And that was Brandi Carlile, Have You Ever? And we're back here in the studios of 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show, and we have guests this morning from the Lake Pend'Oreille School District, Superintendent Sean Woodward and Chief Financial Officer Lisa Halls. And we're talking about the upcoming school levy and other subjects related to the school district.
Yeah, really focusing on the school levy. So, Sean and Lisa, let's explore a couple of the things that have questions have been raised. One is, why do you hold the levy in March? There's a sense that, at least I infer from some of the letters to the editor that I've read, that you're holding it now because you're hoping to depress voter turnout. How would you address that question?
So school districts, like other taxing districts in the state, have four options to run levies: in November, March, May, or August. And our fiscal cycle, just like the state's, starts on July 1st and ends on June 30th. And the reason why we run it in March is that two-thirds of our annual appropriation comes from the state. And if you follow the state legislature, you know it adjourns in January. And generally, their work is done and appropriations are made by the end of March, sometimes the first week in April. So it would be premature for our school district to try to configure and project what two-thirds of our annual revenue is going to be in November. So March is the most prudent from a projection standpoint.
Spring is when you know what you're really going to be getting based on what the legislature does.
Exactly. And we're still operating on estimates because the federal government's fiscal cycle is not concurrent. The federal government starts October 1st and ends September 30th. And so we are operating on estimates that are generally given at the end of March, early April.
Okay. So how... You know, of course, it all boils down to what the tax bill is for voters. How does our tax rate here in Bonner County compare to the taxes that some of this other Idaho counties or taxing districts have?
It's really important to talk about multiple taxing districts. We're one taxing district of, I believe, 52 in Bonner County. And if you are a property taxpayer listening, you would know when you receive your annual tax bill, say you're living in the county, generally the county is the largest taxing district. Right now, that's an average of 36% of your property taxes. Right now, on average, we're about 20%. We're the second largest taxing district, followed by the highway district, which is about 14%. And then there are, you know, generally the fire or an ambulance district. So that's the overall tax bill in Bonner County, which of all the counties in Idaho, last year, and the Idaho State Tax Commission annually, and they haven't done it for this year, ranks the overall tax rates. And in Bonner County, I think we rank 34th of 44 districts, of the 44 counties. So Bonner County property taxpayers overall are paying less in property taxes than the average Idaho taxpayer. And then if we just drill down to the school districts statewide, generally a property taxpayer in Idaho is paying 31% of their property taxes to the public school district. And right now we represent 20%, so we're much lower than the average taxpayer in Idaho. And then if we just configure it to Northern Idaho, our current tax rate is, I'm going to express it as $170 per $100,000 of net taxable value. And last year, statewide school districts were $389 per $100,000 of net taxable value, which means we're 56% below last year's statewide average. The projected increase would bring our projected tax rate up to $221, which still would be 45% below the statewide school district average. So the Bonnie County taxpayer in supporting this levy would be it would be an increase in tax rate, but we'd still be far lower than the statewide average.
So our overall county burden is quite a bit lower than what most taxpayers are experiencing around the state. So let's put it in practical terms for the homeowner. Let's say an average home is assessed at a $250,000 taxable value. As you've already made the point, you know, this is a replacement levy. We've been doing levies every 2 years, and they've become such a big part of the budget now. What is the increase going to be to that average homeowner with a $250,000 assessed value on their home?
We're projecting with a homeowner with the $250,000 assessed value that carries the homeowner exemption will be just under a $7 increase per month.
And we also should note that we have a tax calculator for the first time on our lposd.org. On the left-hand side, we have all of our levy information, and there's a tax calculator. You can plug your numbers in and see what you would be paying per month.
And the numbers you would need is you'd pull out your tax bill and you'd put in your assessed valuation, and then the next cell or line is if you have any exemptions, you would plug in that number, and that would give you then what your net taxable value, and this tax calculator will show you what you're presently paying and then what we project you'd be paying in the first of this two-year levy.
Yeah, that's actually not by month, as I stated, but it's their yearly
annualized
tax.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then we also have on this same website a lot of other information, including I think it's called Currently Known Facts, and there is in increments from $100,000 up to $500,000. It would show you what you're paying currently, what we project you'd be paying in year one, and then the annualized difference. And there are other important things to be found on our website, the ballot.
Sample ballot?
The sample ballot, and all the information that was presented to our school board last fall in October and November. There's a quick two-page currently known facts and then a longer public presentation that goes into more detail.
Yes, and a lot of people ask us for the line item budget for our levy. That can be found within one of the longer presentations. There have been some questions about why are we not running a line item ballot this time around. We tried that 2 years ago where we were very specific. I don't believe, in retrospect, that's the most responsible way to do it for a number of reasons. Number one is this is a two-year levy. And if something were to happen at the state or federal level that we were to receive much less funds than we were anticipating, which could happen, then we would have to adjust how we were spending those levy dollars. And an example would be we would end up choosing staff member positions, teaching positions, over some of the other line items in the levy if we had to make drastic cuts. Now, I will say, every year that I've been here, and Lisa could speak much to this much longer than I can, we stick to the line item budget that we present to our board. So if people want to see how we're going to be spending those dollars, you can find that online.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we're the only school district presently in the state, but not only in our annual external audit, which is required by law, but just in the daily operations, we separate out in what's called a fund, which is a financial term, our maintenance and operations supplemental levy, so that every dollar that is receipted, and every dollar that's expended out of this maintenance and operations supplemental levy, you could have line item detail.
Okay, and so all this information, ton of information, I'm looking at the page right now, is on the website, lposd.org. Look on the left-hand side, you'll see a yellow bar that says levy information. You click on that, and there's a whole bunch of documents there that people can download, as well as that levy calculator, so you can see what the financial impact is. But as you mentioned, Lisa, the average increase to an average homeowner is going to be around $7. You're projecting around $7 a month. So that's really the net impact that is at under discussion, I suppose, when you talk about the increase in the levy this time.
And I think it's true. I think that calculator is a good thing because it really does come down for a lot of homeowners and residents here to be able to know what they will be paying. Excuse me. And also, it says you have to be in the Lake Pend'Oreille School District to be a voter. What does that include? Does that include Priest River, Clark Fork, Hope? I mean, what is the school district's boundaries as a resident to be a voter in this levy?
You bet. So one thing that you could look at online, we have a really nice map that shows our school district boundaries, but yeah, we do not go into Priest River. We do go out to Clark Fork, Cocalala, and we go as far towards Priest River. What's our cutoff there, Lisa? Is it right around Laclede?
Laclede is actually in the West Bonner County.
Laclede's in West Bonner School District, correct.
Yes. So online, you could see that on our website, exactly where our boundaries are at.
So that's great. And so the vote is for this school levy is March 12th. And if you want more information about when and where to vote, there's all kinds of things. There's early voting. You can pre-register. There's deadlines for that. But the vote is March 12th, the levy
vote. And you will vote at your regular polling location, wherever you vote for a general election.
Exactly.
So another question that pops up has to do with how does the cost of housing, because we're hearing an awful lot about that. How is that impacting the school district with housing being so tight now that employees of the district might be having trouble finding housing they can afford?
So Lake Pend'Oreille School District, firstly, is the largest employer in our county. And for your listeners, if any of you attended last fall's economic forum, the pivot point on that really focused on not only the lack of inventory, but also the cost of housing in Bonner County, and juxtaposed that comparatively to the state of Idaho. And the Bonner County Housing Authority made a presentation, and one of their points was that in 2016, and that was the most recent data, it took what the annualized average Idaho earner was making monthly, then took 30% of that, which is the rule of thumb for housing expenditures, and then said, well, what was the dollar amount you can afford in terms of a home? And the difference between the earnings and the dollar amount you could pay for rent or a mortgage were almost netted zero, about $3,000 difference. And then the Bonner County Housing Authority compared what's happening here in Bonner County, and that same methodology, the difference is almost $56,000. So we, as the largest employer and the other employers attending that forum, front and center is that the cost of living generally tied to housing has changed fundamentally in the last, say, 10 or 15 years here. And even if you're recruiting a staff member, they may not be able a year or two into it to afford the housing component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in a situation in Bonner County. I was at that housing, that forum the Bonner County EDC put on in the fall as well. We're in a situation where our average monthly earnings of our workforce are below the state, and yet our cost of housing is way above the average cost of housing around the state. So all workers are caught in a squeeze, and of course the workers in the school district as well. We have time for probably one more question I wanted to raise that is out there. So what happens if it fails? There was a letter to the editor yesterday from one of the officials in the Bonner County Republican Central Committee. That says, well, they'll just run the levy again. How do you respond to that? They'll run the levy again at a lower, ask for a lower amount, I suppose, is her inference.
So we would absolutely do that if we were not to pass this. But in a broader sense, if we weren't to pass it then as well, I spoke at the beginning of the show about what does it fund. So conversely, what would happen is we would lay off about 300 of our staff members. We would consolidate schools. We could not keep our rural schools open. So I want to be clear that as superintendent, I support our rural schools. I wouldn't have it any other way, nor would our community really. Those rural schools are the lifeblood of those small communities. However, we could not keep them open if we lost approximately a third of our funding. So we would not be closing them. We would be consolidating those schools, which there's a subtle difference where you'd have to keep some students in those schools, but the majority of them would be moved to other schools. So a lot of people suggest that, well, you're utilizing fear tactics when we talk about these things. And my response to that would be, boy, we want our voters to be informed. And after the fact, I would feel awful if someone said, well, why didn't you tell us what you would have to do? So the long and the short of it, you would not recognize our school district without these funds.
Yeah. And would a shorter school week be part of the necessary
potentially things that happen? Interestingly enough, those 4-day school weeks just do not realize the dollar savings that people think they're going to realize, and they're just it's just awful for kids, mm-hmm. in my opinion, too, and families. That's just my humble opinion. Yeah. But you would consider things like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we would have to do, because we simply don't have the space, is we would have to implement double shifting schedules like happened in the 80s. Now, on the flip side, we have been very fortunate, a wonderfully supportive community. In my time here for these maintenance and operations supplemental levies, on average, we've passed them at about 64% passage rate. So we really enjoy the support of our community.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, with that, we're going to... Lisa, you have another point?
Well, I think there was another point in that letter to the editor that you just mentioned that said... Over the last several fiscal cycles, the state has appropriated additional dollars to education. And that's emphatically true, and school districts are appreciative. But what the letter did not highlight is that in 2009, when the recession was in full tilt at the state level, education took very, very deep cuts. And it's really over the last 4 years that now... Actually, this fiscal year is the first time in a decade that on an inflation-adjusted standpoint that the appropriation level at the state is commensurate with 2009.
Yeah, and I think what we saw during the recession was that this reliance on the local district levies became more pronounced during that period of time because the contribution from the state ended up going down over 10 years. Now we're just back to where we were. 10 years ago. And with that, we want to remind folks that this is neither a vote nay or yay program. We're just trying to provide information about what you're voting on. Get informed about the election, which is coming up on March 12th. You can do that at the school district website, lposd.org. Voting will be March 12th at your usual voting locations. Around the wherever you vote in the general election, that's where you'll vote for this as well. Polls will be open from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. that day. There is early voting that you can do at the county elections office at the Bonner County building that's on Highway 2 there. You can vote via absentee ballot in advance. And you, again, get all this information at the Lake Pend Oreille School District website, lpusd.org. You can also give a phone call. Talk to real people there, 208-263-2184.
Great information. We want to thank you both, Lisa Halls, Chief Financial Officer, and Sean Woodward, Superintendent of the Lake Pend Oreille School District. Having facts, as you said, Sean, just to be informed is the basis of what you are up to right now, getting the information out. Your website is really informative. So thank you so much for coming in, Lisa and Sean.
Thank you so much.
We're just about out of time. I want to remind our listeners tomorrow for the morning show, Jim and Jack will be there with talking with Suzanne Davis and Kimber Glidden from the Bonner County Library. And next week, Chris and I will have Shelby Ronstad with a State of the City report or proclamation, not a proclamation, but just
address. Yeah.
So thank you for tuning in. We're going to go out with a couple songs. First one is Myra Belote. It's a Bob Dylan song. As I went out one morning. And then Simon and Garfunkel, A Hazy Shade of Winter. We hope you have a beautiful day.
Yeah, bye now.